Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Roger Marzullo appearing on behalf of the appellants, Laura Elkins and John Robbins, husband and wife. In 2001, Ms. Elkins and Mr. Robbins constructed an addition to their house on Capitol Hill here in the District of Columbia in complete accordance with a validly issued building permit and in complete accordance with the requirements of the District of Columbia. Nevertheless, certain district officials decided that they wanted to see that addition torn down, an addition which had cost in the range of $100,000, and to force Mr. Robbins and Ms. Elkins to go back and get a new permit. This case should have gone to the jury, and our request today is that this court reverse, send the case back to the district court for trial before the jury as to each of the four individual defendants plus the District of Columbia. We have 3 points to make, I think. First, the district court erred in holding that under Grove versus Ramirez and other Supreme Court authority that the Fourth Amendment authorizes a generalized search even though there is nothing to be seized.
I don't think that's exactly what the district court holds, and I think you're taking that case out of context, aren't you, Mr. Marzullo?
Well, I'm open to discussing that. Thank you.
Well, there are warrants, inspection warrants issued and inspection orders partaking of the same nature issued fairly regularly to inspect premises that don't describe the seizing of anything.
I think that's true, Your Honor, in connection with a generalized inspection. It mm-hmm. seems, if I may, as I understand what the law given us by the Supreme Court, it is that if the allegation is that there is something unlawful going on.
Something to be seized. Then you have to describe the item to be seized with particularity.
Yes.
But in an inspection warrant, there's nothing to be seized.
Yes.
I would have thought your argument here, rather than being that this warrant was void ab initio, would have been that the search was unconstitutional because it exceeded the authority of the warrant.
Well, and
you haven't preserved that, have you?
Well, yes. I think what happened here, of course, Your Honor, is by misapplying, in our view, this collateral estoppel rule, the district court, right at the outset of this case, said the only thing you can do is deal with is to accept the ruling of the hearing officer at the Office of Appeals and Hearings. Mm-hmm. Here, the government, the District of Columbia, went in thinking they wanted to try to find documents that would prove their case for revocation of the permit.
They could not. I don't think there's any question that there was an unconstitutional seizure of the notebook. I don't see how the district can keep a straight face and argue that that wasn't unconstitutionally seized. Likewise, I think it likely, at least, or possible at the very least, that the search, the rifling through other items of personality belonging to your clients, was also unconstitutional as exceeding the scope of the warrant. Perhaps that's off the table because of collateral estoppel, but that doesn't mean that every warrant issued that doesn't describe something to be seized is not valid to conduct an inspection.
I absolutely agree with that, Your Honor. Our point here is that the alleged violation of district rules was the Historic Preservation Act, which deals with the exterior of the house. The only complaint that the district has ever asserted in this case was that the roof line of the house did not comply with what Mr. Maloney thought historic preservation demanded in this area. There was never any reason to go into the house. Therefore, the affidavit prepared by Mr. Noble, in which he said that there was an imminent threat to health and safety by reason of this roof line on the house, was certainly not true.
Did all the construction take place outside the house?
Well, naturally.
When you build a roof line, and I'm not a carpenter, but when you build a roof line, don't you need to go inside the house?
Well, certainly, Your Honor,
don't you need to go and inspect trusses? And hadn't this roof line actually collapsed? Hadn't this roof actually collapsed?
Not the roof line. Actually, there was a wall early on that collapsed.
That's inside, right?
Yes. No, an outside wall, Your Honor, that had a wall that had to be rebuilt. My point is this, that, of course, Mr. Stevens, the neighbor, brought suit in Superior Court to stop this construction. The District of Columbia went into District Court, put Mr. Ford and Mr. Bellow, their chief inspector and their deputy chief inspector, on the stand and told the Superior Court judge, this construction is completely in accordance with the permit and the requirements of
the district. Their testimony was that the permit was validly issued.
And that the construction was in accordance with the permit. Both of those points, Your Honor, were raised in the Superior Court case. It was only subsequently that Mr. Maloney, who never agreed with the district's position in the lawsuit, decided that he would organize a campaign to get this permit revoked.
You're way beyond the issues of the case. I understand that your client and perhaps you have strong feelings about the background for this, but that's way beyond anything we have before us today.
Certainly. Going back to the point that you asked about, Your Honor, there was no reason to search the Elkins Robbins home other than to either A, seize documents, or B, rough them up and make the point that...
Like Judge Griffith, it would seem to me not unreasonable to assume that inspecting for construction would involve looking at the joists or beams or whatever were involved in constructing a roof line. But as I say, I can see an argument here, a very convincing argument, that prowling through their personality had nothing to do with inspecting the house at all. And are you saying that's you don't raise that here only because of the collateral estoppel rule, or?
No, we believed, Your Honor, that the entire search.
I understand that, and what I'm saying is that is not, frankly, a very convincing argument.
Understood, and
I'm saying that you might have had a more convincing argument that the search became unconstitutional when it exceeded the scope of the warrant, and I'm not sure what your response is to that.
I fully agree with you, Your Honor. I fully agree that, and that was our point, that if this search was an inspection, then why were they turning over the sofa, pulling out the drawers? Why were they going into the bedrooms, looking under the beds? Those are not the kinds of things that relate in any way to an inspection. Why were there armed officers present? Why were Ms. Elkins and Mr. Robbins.
Remind me, how do you avoid collateral estoppel? Wasn't all this litigated before the administrative agency?
No.
Move on to the collateral estoppel.
Certainly, Your Honor. Collateral estoppel, of course, applies in an instance in which the same parties have litigated the same issues in another case, and where it is not unfair to apply that principle. Here, the plaintiffs brought suit in federal district court where they had a right to litigate the case. The court stayed that case for determination by the Office of Hearings and Appeal of the district's revocation petition. In the course of that, the only thing that the landowners did was to move to exclude these documents that had been unlawfully seized. It was an evidentiary motion. It was not a litigation as to whether or not their civil rights, guaranteed by Section 1983, nor even their Fourth Amendment rights were violated, except to the extent of whether the seizure, the search and seizure, was unlawful. So we don't have a full and complete litigation of the issues in any court. It is, of course, in an administrative context, and most particularly, it's an evidentiary determination. And we believe it is also manifestly incorrect, so that the district court was not bound by that determination. Finally,
How long did you wait before you made this argument against collateral estoppel?
The district said something about that, Your Honor. Procedurally, this case has been quite convoluted, but initially a motion to dismiss was brought by the district, and we cross moved for summary judgment. It was in that determination that the district judge said, well, I think collateral estoppel applies. At that point, there really was nowhere else for us to go. The district filed multiple motions for summary judgment for reconsideration thereafter, three summary judgment motions and a couple of reconsiderations, at which point we got backed into the corner that we were going to trial on the seizure of the notebook, which took a few seconds. That's all that was supposed to go to the jury. That's the point at which we told the district court, well, if that's the court's position, we think it's incorrect, but obviously nominal damages are all you're going to receive for that, so there's no reason to waste the resources of the court and the parties on a full jury trial as to these nominal damages. So,
I'm sorry, perhaps I'm not following procedurally what happened here, but you mentioned that you never got any kind of an opportunity to litigate the 1983 claim based on the Fourth Amendment violation. Why wasn't that raised at trial?
Well, of course, we didn't have a trial, Your Honor.
Well, I understand that you ultimately didn't, but wouldn't that have been the time to raise that?
Well, what the district judge had ruled was that the only evidence we could put on, the district filed a motion in limine and said the only evidence that we could submit was that Ms. Cherry had seized the notebook and that we couldn't talk about any other aspect of the unlawful search.
But I assume that he was doing that because of the ruling on collateral estoppel, but your argument is you're not collaterally estopped because this issue wasn't before the administrative law judge, correct?
Yes, correct, Your Honor.
So why wouldn't the argument have been made at that point?
You mean it before the hearing officer? Before the hearing officer, we simply argued these documents, this evidence should be excluded.
The hearing officer, you state in your brief, the hearing officer ruled that the search was constitutional.
Right? Yes.
So this issue was litigated before the hearing officer.
Well, what the hearing officer ruled was that the participants in the search, including Ms. Cherry, could testify to what they saw. We tried to suppress their testimony as well, saying that they couldn't testify to what they had seen inside the house. But the hearing officer...
You're jumping again, though, the question of, assume they could get in the house, from there on, when they start prowling through the personalty, there is an argument to be made that the search is unconstitutional. It's not necessarily an all or none proposition, and I don't see how you preserve the proposition that, I'm not sure whether you have or not, I'll put it that way, the proposition that the search was unconstitutional as exceeding the scope of the warrant, as opposed to the argument that the warrant itself was unconstitutional ab initio.
Right. And I think the reason we were not able to make that argument to the district judge was because of her ruling based on the hearing officer. He divided the analysis into search and seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the search was lawful, the seizure wasn't because it wasn't authorized by the warrant.
So the issue you still want to litigate is whether the search was lawful.
Yes, precisely, Your Honor. The search primarily, of course, sorting through the personal documents, through the artwork of Ms. Elkins and so forth and so on.
But it's one thing to argue that the warrant under which the search was made was unconstitutionally issued. It's quite another to say that your constitutional rights were violated because the search exceeded the scope of the warrant.
I'm
really asking if you have preserved that second argument.
Well, I think we have. Our whole point from the beginning has been that the trial court was wrong in saying that the entire search was constitutional. And by arguing, I don't think it's an all or nothing proposition that by saying, no, the entire search was not constitutional, that we have certainly preserved the argument, should the court so find, that part of the search was constitutional and part of it wasn't. Finally, as to the individuals and their participation, these are highly factual issues. I think there's a certain amount of agreement between us and the district, and that is that the trial court, in ruling on these various summary judgment motions and so forth, made a number of factual determinations which, frankly, should not have been made on summary judgment. And I think we disagree only in the ultimate result being that all of these issues, both the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment issues, should be submitted to the jury, and that should be this court's order. That should be the reversal. If the court has no further questions, I will reserve for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stacey Anderson on behalf of the district and the individual defendants in this case.
Yes.
Your Honor, Justin Tell, I'll just begin by responding to your question about whether or not plaintiffs have preserved the issue regarding the search exceeding the scope of the warrant. It's the defendant's position that that issue has not been preserved in this case. The complaint alleged that the warrant was not supported by probable cause. They focused on Mr. Noble's assertion regarding the health and safety issues with respect to the unlawful construction, and now they've kind of, their claim has now morphed into this Graw argument that the warrant itself is facially invalid. They have not presented a claim that the search warrant was valid, but the search exceeded the scope of the warrant. Were the court to find that that was preserved, the district's response would be that were that the case, the liability issue remains the same. Ms. Williams-Cherry would be entitled to qualified immunity, even assuming the scope of the search exceeded what was authorized.
I'm not at all sure that you're correct in that regard, counsel. Isn't it pretty obvious that a warrant that allows you to inspect a building for construction violations isn't going to be satisfied by searching through people's file drawers?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But as to qualified immunity with respect to Ms. Williams-Cherry, we have to look at her actions and whether they were reasonable or not under the circumstances.
Yeah. And is it reasonable to think that searching through file drawers looking for evidence that the construction?
It is when you're a line officer, Your Honor, who asks
the
search.
Is there evidence that she had read the warrant?
There's no evidence.
Is there any legal requirement that she read the warrant?
No, there's no legal requirement.
And what if this had been brought against Officer Johnson?
Different situation. We
Why?
Don't have any information Why? Regarding because he had the warrant. He knew.
And it was the police who were to execute the
warrant. Correct, Your Honor. We don't have any information as to what motivated Officer Johnson to indicate to the other search members that they could search for documents. That evidence is simply not in the record. I can't speculate, but
on this, why didn't Ms. Williams-Cherry know better than she did? Why wasn't there any training here?
Well,
they're sending her out to execute a search warrant. Don't tell her anything about it. I mean, this.
She didn't even read it, you say?
Well, she's, again.
Is it reasonable to not read a warrant when your agency is the one that requested the warrant and you're the agency representative going out to conduct the search?
It's our position, yes, Your Honor, the facts of this
That's
case.
That's your position?
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Williams-Cherry.
Can you make it with a straight face?
Yes, Your Honor. I can absolutely assert that Ms. Williams-Cherry is entitled to qualified immunity in this case, and I can do so with a straight face, Your Honor. This was the first search warrant that was ever requested by DCRA.
Should not that have triggered a degree of care? We haven't done this before. Let's look at the warrant at least.
I mean,
you go out on a search and don't read the warrant, and then you say you've got qualified immunity because it was reasonable not to know what was in the warrant?
Yes, Your Honor, because she was a line officer. She was not charged with executing.
She wouldn't be my line officer very long.
Well, Your Honor, I submit that the underlying decision in Graw, the line officers in that particular case were found to be entitled to qualified immunity, whereas Graw, the search leader, was not.
The facts in that case parallel this one, really?
The role of the officers, I believe so, yes, Your Honor. The case is very clear that line officers are simply helping to execute a search warrant.
She was doing more than helping to execute. She was a principal representative on the scene for the agency that got the warrant.
There were multiple representatives from the agency there, including her supervisor, who was there as well. He and the MPD officers were in charge of executing that warrant.
Did the warrant say who was to execute it?
It was directed to the Metropolitan Police Department, not the DCRA, the defendants in this case. So, yes, and it was DCRA's understanding that they were responsible.
Back to the question, why wasn't she trained to do that?
Your Honor, this was the first time that they had ever sought a warrant.
That doesn't answer that question.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
serious matter, right? I mean,
correct.
It's a serious matter to go rummaging through someone's home.
I absolutely don't.
And so, do you have any defense for the district in not training its people how to go about doing this?
Again, the district broadly includes the Metropolitan Police Department. Well, they were executing the warrant. They obviously, there's no evidence here.
What was the role supposed to be for this person then?
I'm sorry?
What was her role supposed to be?
Her role was to assist.
Why was she out there?
She understood her role at the time to take photographs of the exterior of the building because she was conducting the inspection on behalf of the historic.
You went out there to conduct part of the search.
Correct. She.
You went out there to conduct
to take photographs. She returned to
and she didn't see fit to read the warrant or.
Your Honor, this is a
you
common.
You can't read this warrant and think that you've got the right to prowl through their papers. That's just not reasonable.
Your Honor, again, it's a common situation where you have multiple officers executing a search warrant that not every officer is required to read that warrant. They're entitled. It is settled law that officers are entitled to rely on representations of other officers, and in particular, the leaders of the search. And that's what occurred in this case, and it was reasonable. And we do assert that Ms. Williams-Cherry is entitled to qualified immunity.
But your argument might be different if we're for Officer Johnson here.
Again, I'm not going to speculate, Your Honor, because we don't know what Officer Johnson's reasoning was at the time. I cannot say that there is not any set of facts that might make his actions reasonable. We just don't have that evidence in the record. But yes, I agree.
How about this set of facts?
Yeah.
On this set of facts.
On this set of facts?
Is Officer Johnson's conduct executing the warrant reasonable?
I assume in looking at, he had the warrant, I would say under Graw, the warrant is facially deficient, and yes, he would probably be found liable in this case, but he was not, again, named as a defendant in this case. With respect to the collateral estoppel issue, I wanted to make just a couple points with respect to that. There was a question as to why plaintiffs raised this issue so late, and I would like to give some explanation. After the stay was lifted in this case in 2007, plaintiffs returned to court with a motion for summary judgment. They had in their hands that OAH decision saying the seizure was unlawful, and they relied on that. They asserted offensive collateral estoppel with respect to that, arguing that the district was precluded from challenging the validity of the seizure. The district court, in part, ruled that collateral estoppel applied in this case because plaintiffs asked them to, or asked her, the district court to. They asserted, again, this is in document 42, their updated motion for summary judgment, that they had all parties had an adequate opportunity to litigate the legality of the search and seizure before OAH. It was only 2 years later, when they were unable to come up with evidence of compensatory damages with respect to the seizure, that they changed their theory and argued for the first time that collateral estoppel did not apply in this case. As to the collateral estoppel issue, OAH considered the full validity of the search warrant in this case, not simply the seizure of the documents. There was a 22-page decision issued that addressed the probable cause supporting the warrant. There was other evidence that was challenged. There was photographs and observations that were sought to be suppressed, not simply the documents that were seized. So OAH fully addressed that, and it's our position that collateral estoppel applies in this case. With respect to the issue of Mr. Noble's liability, we are asking that the court reverse the district court's judgment with respect to him. When the evidence is viewed in the light most favorable to him, there's simply no evidence whatsoever that he had any responsibility for the seizure of documents in this case. He did not make the decision to seek the warrant. He simply executed the affidavit, which was supported by probable cause. He had no communications with anyone in the search team regarding the seizure of documents. He simply had no role with respect to that, and it was error for the district court to enter judgment against
him.
Was
he there at the scene of the search?
No, sir. He was not involved in the decision. He simply executed the affidavit. He did not communicate to the search team. He was just an individual who had knowledge of the ongoing efforts to.
This may or may not be germane, but there are a lot of different documents in here. Was that language about the imminent danger to health and safety in the affidavit that he?
It was, Your Honor, and that comes from our.
Excuse me, go ahead.
That comes from the statute, Your Honor, the statement of policy underlying our construction and historic preservation statute.
It comes from the statute and supply facts. I mean, granted, this is put in there in order to try to comply with the statute, but it's not true, is it?
I mean,
he swore to an untrue statement.
No, that is absolutely not true, Your Honor. There's a presumption that all construction code violations are a danger to the health, welfare, and safety of the public.
That's a legal conclusion. He swore to an affidavit in which he said there was such a danger.
If he believes that that is in fact...
there was no such danger so far as this record reveals.
Well, I don't know if that's correct, Your Honor. There was a roof that collapsed.
Tell me about the danger to health.
There was a roof that collapsed at one point. So
there was a wall that collapsed.
There was a wall, a chimney, and a portion of the roof that collapsed, and that's
in
the record.
When?
That was at the beginning of the construction.
Now, how long after that did he swear out this warrant that there was imminent danger of health and safety? That's my answer.
It was March 2003, and I'm trying to think of that. November 2001 to March in 2003, a year and a half or so, approximately. But again, Your Honor, there's a presumption. It is not a false statement. OAH found that it was not a false statement, and it's our position that, in fact, there was
Remind me what the OAH found a violation of. I just can't.
Second story addition, Your Honor. When plaintiffs went to get this building permit, they were expressly told and understood that they were not allowed to put a second story addition.
So the violation was beyond the scope of the permit.
It was beyond the scope
of the
permit.
And is it the position of the district that anything that's beyond the scope of a permit presents a safety problem?
Any unlawful construction. Again, there was no plan that was submitted for that. We had no basis to know that the construction was adequate. There was no permit issued for that.
The adjective imminent just plays no role in your analysis, right?
Again, not knowing if that construction was up to par. Yes, I think, again, do not believe that was an inaccurate statement when you're dealing with construction of an unauthorized second-story addition to a home. And that construction was evident at the outset, and that was what the enforcement efforts were directed at in this case, the unlawful second-story addition. And OAH did, in fact, find that there was an unlawful second-story addition in this case and required plaintiffs to take corrective action to remove that. If Your Honors have no further questions, we would ask that the court affirm as to the district on the issues and reverse as to...
Let me just make sure I understand your position. If we hold collateral estoppel does not apply, you cannot defend the going through the papers, can you?
I can defend on qualified immunity, yes. With
but
respect
cannot,
to defend...
Okay,
I'm sorry,
you cannot say that that is not unconstitutional. I'll put it that way.
Again, that issue wasn't litigated below, Your Honor. On this record,
You've
with what we have,
though,
yes, sir, Your Honor, I have, and I understand.
And
yes, sir.
You can't claim that was a constitutional search at that point, can you, counsel?
No, but in terms of liability, I would assert qualified immunity based on the defendants in this case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Seeing no questions, I believe appellant had about 4 minutes for rebuttal. All right, you have about 4 minutes for rebuttal, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I actually don't see a need to take all that time. Would suggest that, in answer to Your Honor's question, Officer Cherry certainly had no excuse for not having read the warrant. Keep in mind that she also went to Superior Court. She was the designated person to go to Superior Court with the District Council to obtain the warrant give testimony.
What about those Supreme Court cases that say line officers need not read the warrant?
Well, I'm not sure that that's a general rule of law, Your Honor. And I think that is particularly true where...
What is the general rule of law, then?
Well, I think the general rule of law is that, at least here, where the chief inspector for the Historic Preservation Office, which was the complaining party in all of this, is going to do an alleged inspection of the house, that she has some duty to know what it is she's supposed to be doing there. Now, the district tells us that it was the police department doing the inspection. And that really confuses the whole issue, mm-hmm. because what do police inspectors know about wiring and construction and plumbing? Surely the truth is that this was an attempt to obtain documents and to toss the house. That's what was going on. And Officer Cherry was... the lead person. She'd been in this house several times. She'd inspected it a number of times herself.
Let me ask you what your response is to the district's proposition that Mr. Noble has done nothing that warrants liability on his part to survive the district court entered summary judgment against him. What do you say his acts were which should underlie that judgment?
It's a continuation process, which starts with Mr. Noble instructing Mr. Ford, the chief inspector, even though there is no violation of law, find a way to stop construction. And we have
the first part of that sentence is not a quote. At most, the find a way to stop this is a quote.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Thereafter, Mr. Noble.
That by itself certainly is not enough to get you a judgment, is it?
No. I would agree that by itself is not. It's a series of events. Mr. Noble then himself issued multiple stop work orders and notices of violation.
That's not what the lawsuit's about anymore, is it?
Well, for the most part, but I think it all relates to a state of mind, Your Honor, which is an issue in
state of mind is only relevant if you have X.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to find is, what do you say he did that subjects him to liability?
2 weeks before this search, Mr. Noble sent a letter saying, if you don't allow us to go in your house, we're going to pursue our legal remedies. He had spoken on a number of occasions with the attorney who was drafting the search warrant and the affidavit. He signed the affidavit. He selected and sent out the team. Ms. Cherry, although she was assigned to historic preservation, actually worked for DCRA, which had the inspection responsibilities. And when Ms. Cherry returned with all these documents and so forth, he, Mr. Maloney, sat down and sorted through them. And then Mr. Noble signed a petition for revocation, the first claim of which said, based on these documents we found, we think you falsified your application for this permit. Mr. Noble was the chief actor throughout this entire period of time, Your Honor.
Okay, I think your time is. Oh, got another question. My colleague.
I'm concerned about your comment about the police being there. I mean, the district says the police were there because the agency had never executed an administrative warrant before. The police were there simply to show them how to do it. Your response to that?
Well, the district, the DCRA does inspections every day, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. How is it they could not know how to inspect a building to see if it was up to code? That's what they do. The police don't. In short, I don't know where that statement that the police were in charge comes from. It was DCRA.
The warrant is directed to the D.C. Municipal Police to conduct the search.
Yeah, and
I know where the statement comes from. I can't make it make any sense.
Exactly.
But that's where it comes from. The court ordered that the police conduct it. Now, as you say, figuring out why the police should be the agency executing it is more difficult, but where the statement comes from is pretty plain.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And the Superior Court was the issuing authority, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
If there are no further questions,
thank you,
Your Honor.
Have none, so case is submitted. May call the next case.